Morning, honorable members, and morning to the SALCA leadership, the department, treasury, officials of our department, DG, and the team. Can we start with our meeting? I think the meeting is not going to be a very long meeting. Let us get apologies.
Apologies from Mr. Dube, Ms. Mtembo, Professor Kubisa, and Mr. Kalisa.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. I'd like to forward an apology for the minister is attending cabinet meeting. Also, Deputy Minister Nell won't make it. Thank you.
First is a presentation by Treasury. I think Mr. Pillay is here. And then you'll introduce your team. And then the item on our agenda is the impact of VBS Bank on the finance of municipalities. And that is really the issue that we are discussing. And we'll have a presentation by Treasury. And then have a discussion. And move to item number 2, and the Municipal Councillors Pension Fund presentation on critical areas, really. Presentation generally is about critical areas. We always want members of parliament to have sufficient time to pose questions and also engage on the presentation. And then we'll be way forward and we'll close the meeting. Mr. Pillay, you want to introduce your team?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is T.V. Pillay. I'm with the National Treasury, the division that's responsible for the broader MFMA implementation and related matters. With me, I have Wendy Fenno, my colleague from the Intergovernmental Relations, responsible for policy, and also Selo Mashaba, that's responsible for the grants and broader issues around the Division of Revenue. So that's our team. I think given the challenges that we face, some of the colleagues and the senior reps from the Treasury are also at other forums now dealing with many other engagements. So we spread ourselves thin in this engagement. Chairperson, I will lead the engagement. So broadly, sticking to the focus of the meeting, I think there was an engagement already on the VBS Bank issue with the Committee for Finance just about 3 weeks ago, where the South African Reserve Bank had made a presentation as well on the status of the intervention. So we won't cover much of that, but the broader issues that we will talk to relates to the VBS is a mutual bank, and then the options around the mutual bank, where there is a different licensing regime for mutual banks and commercial banks. The issue that we would also share with you see on slide 3, is the broader shareholding of VBS. That's just for background noting for the members, just to be sure where that is coming from. the slide 4 just talks about the rapid growth of the VBS bank and the areas around how it moved along. I'm not sure if everyone has the slides. I think committee members do. So.
Okay. I think it seems every member.
We're fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. The expansion was then largely just around 2016, moving into a later part where the loans and the growth of the loans peaked at around 250%. Sorry?
Little bit a bigger room and try to use your talking machine a little bit closer.
Ah, sure.
Will assist us to hear. I think we struggle to hear.
Okay. Thank you. No, is it better now? Okay, I think it should be fine. So the bank grew rapidly over a period during 2016, which is quite a new phenomenon. The major part of the bank's taking on its asset liabilities, loans, and deposits was around mortgages, installments, and leasing, overdraft loans, and advances. Now, the compositions of the loans were largely, as one could see from the graph, spiked just after the 2016 period. That assessment, members and chair, has come from the analysis that the Reserve Bank has done. So it's just probably already in the public domain. But in slide 5 comes where it impacts directly on municipalities. And here the issue is due to the risk nature of the type of bank that we have, we had, since 2003, the Act allowed for municipalities to bank with commercial banks and not with non-commercial banks like a mutual bank, given the risks associated with it. The objectives was always to ensure that the municipal funds were safe, ready available for spending on its budget priorities. And national and provincial departments generally bank with the Saab Bank, that's for the background noting, and only municipalities and public entities bank with the private banks. So the non-commercial banks, like a mutual banks, are typically small, relatively lightly regulated by the South African Reserve Bank, and cannot offer the immediate liquidity that one would expect if you deposit public funds into it in the need for service delivery. So moving on to slide 6, the VBS then actively, in a sense that we've seen, flouted the law and focusing on municipal deposits, which comprise almost 75% of all its deposits. Despite the restrictions that were provided by the MFMA and the process that continued to accept new deposits, which was in a sense communicated to municipalities in August 2016. We requested at least an option to phase out the past municipal deposits in order to comply with the MFMA requirements. An initial assessment indicated that it accepted over 1 billion more in deposits after August. When an email was then sent by the MFMA team to advise municipalities that they were in breach of the law. Now, this is talking to the regulations, the investment regulations issued under the MFMA. So, in essence, the approach appeared to have continued with the investments by municipalities in the bank over the short term. The next slide generally talks to some of the structural flaws of the business model, and this is the context I think we need to possibly also understand why certain interventions were taken at certain points. So the modus operandi of the VBS was to make long-term loans, but knowing that their primary funding was short-term in nature, this is the municipal deposits, cash, surplus cash, grants, and an option for its own available resources that were required over the short term. So what happened was in the process then these were lumpy, and only a few depositors then make up the 75% of the funding. Hence, the business model that was looked at by the South African Reserve Bank also confirmed that the design of that framework and the modality wasn't effective. Now, what you don't see in the slides, I think, is the point that the South African Reserve Bank has been working and engaging with VBS over the time to try and support and assist them in the gaps that were identified at the time. On slide 8, we talk about the National Treasury. Now, what has happened there was we became aware of the investments by municipalities, selected investment by municipalities through our Section 71 reports. And as you may know, it's a reform that was introduced in the MFMA. Although it's a few years being implemented, the veracity of that information that's coming from municipalities is also challenging, in a sense that the accuracy, the timeliness, and the fullness of the information can also be questioned. So when it was picked up, we then advised those municipalities that we could see had invested in the VBS to caution them against that and pointed out the regulatory framework that applied to municipalities again. So in late 2017, then the bank tried to interdict the Treasury from engaging with municipalities, perhaps understanding that this was going to become a challenge to try and make that work better. Subsequent to the communication, the VBS continued to accept deposits from municipalities, which is a real challenge in the system. So it's not immediately apparent if these were rolled overs or new deposits. And I think we require far more disclosure from some of these municipalities to get to the bottom of what it is that we are actually looking for to understand it better. So slide 9 talks about the number. There's 15 municipalities that are now impacted, mainly in Limpopo, which is the Vimbe District Municipality, which has the largest exposure. It has over 300 million in deposits at the VBS, approximately a third of its revenue base, annual revenue. The municipalities that deposited funds with VBS tended to be more rural type and drawn not only from Limpopo but also Northwest and Gauteng that make up the 15. Slide 10 and provides you with a list of municipalities and the names of those municipalities together with an analysis of the type of exposure. So the main exposure relates to what we could see, the type of investments that we were aware of after some research in February and March this year. We managed to obtain certain of these amounts from the municipalities directly. Because, of course, as I mentioned earlier, the Section 71 and other reports were not accurately reflecting the deposits with VBS. We also, for your benefit as well, members, is also to compare that with the annual operating revenues. So that will tell you, in a nutshell, the percentage of annual revenues that would make up the exposure that these municipalities have. And in some instances, it's ranging from 52% to down to about 1 to 2%. The next slide talks about the widespread. This is a challenging point because it's allegations at the moment, and I think we need to premise the slide by saying that. There appears to be, from the information that was obtained from the curator, I think, that there appears to be some mismanagement along the way with the VBS. I think evidence will be exposed after full investigation has been concluded. Let me also premise that by saying that. Currently the status is there's approximately around 900 million that cannot be located at this time within the system of audits that have been undertaken. Now, that is a challenge in the system. This money appears to have been, I don't want to use the words, but in a sense, the audits, once completed, will have to show what transpired, and we're waiting for that audit outcome from the, I think the curator is working on it with the bank itself to try to understand where the funds were. There is also challenges that you've probably seen in the press as well around loans paid to certain directors and unrecoverable loans to others, loans related to other parties, internal inquiries at the KPMG regarding the auditors that has been already in the press, and some evidence that the VBS paid certain commissions to certain people to maybe request the municipalities to deposit funds there. Now, those will need to be exposed through the relevant investigations that will have to come through. We don't have information, facts on this at the moment, so I think we must just manage our expectations there during question time as well, colleagues and members. The forensic investigations, therefore, is underway. Now, when we move to slide 12, we talk about what is it that we can reasonably expect, but this again is not exacting because the work is still unfolding by the curator. So if members would also bear that in mind. So the point that is made is the municipalities may get between 10 and 40 cents in the rand on the deposits, which is quite low if you look at the amounts that were invested. The payout to municipalities is currently highly uncertain. Therefore, we cannot comment further on what would be coming through the system. So, but what we do know apparently is there are over 13,000 ordinary deposited with their life savings in this bank as well. In line with the mandate of protecting the most vulnerable, the restructuring will focus on these depositors. At this stage, the ordinary depositors will get back almost all their deposits. We have it as an approved in restructuring that benefits the rural retail depositors, funeral insurance, stock files, and other vulnerable groups. So there's a multiple stakeholders involved in this engagement. There may be little left for municipalities after these are then paid out. So it's a real challenge that we face in those 15 municipalities. What can Treasury do? I think there's a whole process that have come through, and committee members are fully aware of the general principle of no bailout, which has been in the framework for a while now, the white paper on local government, the constitutional framework, and the right to govern by municipalities on its own initiatives. So those are some of the guiding principles we'll have to look at when possible mitigation solutions are being looked at as we move along. We also talked about local governments, the accountability framework, as well as we spoke earlier about the Section 71 report, but I think committee members would know, having received those reports as well on a regular basis, I'm told, we would also be able to extract what you can out of there. Now, it may not be the exacting science that everything is reported on a Section 71 report. Then you'll get reams and reams and reams of paperwork or information that generally is going to be questionable around the value add. If municipalities then violate, the biggest issue is they have that mechanism. If municipalities violate legal requirements, National Treasury has enforcement mechanisms, including stopping of grants in the DORA and Section 216 of the Constitution. Now, committee members would also know that that mechanism was also used at one point, but it was retracted because of the consequences and so forth and engagements that transpired thereafter. And this should be fresh in committee members' minds. Chairperson, the other two big points I think we would like to, or three or four big points that is not necessarily in the presentation, is around we mentioned the principles underpinning the issue, but there's obviously certain things that have happened over the last 12 to 18 months in those selected municipalities that We do have the consequence measures in Section 171 of the MFMA. It was communicated to the municipalities as well. During a meeting that we had with them in March, all of them were in the room with the municipal managers and the CFOs. And it's unfortunate that we are not aware of any action taken by municipal councils at this point. It's obviously a process that has to be followed to ensure that consequence management is then fully implemented. So in the spirit of what we have, and collectively over 1.5 billion that has been invested by municipalities, it's quite a large amount. So we would also look at support from this committee on the type of engagements, and we would urge the committee also to invite those specific mayors to come to account on consequence management action taken if it is found after investigation that certain people were not did not operate within the framework of the law. And the law is clear in this instance that municipalities were prohibited in a sense from investing in mutual banks, rather with commercial banks and other banks where the security was far more in place. So I think in that spirit, those are some of the big engagements. And members, I think through you, Chair, thank you very much. I'd like to check my colleagues if you would like to add anything. Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation, Mr. Pillay. I think members do have the slides. Can we invite members to... Mr. Pillay, your delegation is the delegation of four?
Three.
A delegation of three.
Yes.
In SALCA. Before I move, I just worry that we don't know many colleagues who are in the meeting. Can members allow us just to introduce the team? Just for the purposes of records, anyway. Bob. Yes, ma'am. Upresse lapho ngoba sikuzwa kahle. Ayike khuluma.
Morning members, my name is Olano Makhubela. I'm the Deputy Register for Pension Funds at the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, which used to be the Financial Services Board.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Juanito Diamond. I was invited by SALGA and the FSCA. I am one of the curators of MCPS.
Okay.
Sorry, my name is Nisar Daud. I'm from the curator's office of MCPA.
Okay. Okay. Sisu? Anyone want to introduce himself or herself?
Morning, Chairperson and the committee. My name is Advocate Bangan. I'm from DCOG, responsible for entity oversight.
Morning, committee. My name is Kusel Wandwanya from DCOG, Entity Oversight.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, members. My name is Jackie Mayepa. I'm responsible for municipal HR systems in the department, COPTA. Thank you.
Good morning, members. My name is Itebogeng Ntuli from the Office of the Director General, DCOG, Parliamentary Officer.
Good morning, all. My name is Lizile Pagati. I'm from COPTA Communications.
Good morning, honorable members in the chair. The name is Sonu Abokeke. I am representing SALGA, Parliamentary Affairs Office.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. Colleagues Lance Joel from SALGA.
Good morning, honorable members, colleagues. My name is Mpokuno, the National Chair of SALGA Finance Working Group.
Okay. Thank you very much, colleagues. Thank you very much. I think the presentation has been made by by Mr. Pillay. I nearly call you Honorable Pillay. Can I say so? I don't know, that is reserved for members of parliament. Okay. I can also try to do so. Colleagues, let us then engage with the report and the presentation. Let me take the hands, Honorable Tetua, Honorable Melhem, Honorable Malulege, Honorable Ngwezi, Honorable Masondo. Okay, Honorable Tetua.
Thanks, Chair. Treasurer, may I get your clear advice that you have sent to the municipality after you have picked up that there's something that is not going right, in particular when this fund were invested, most of this fund were invested to the long term instead of the short term. What was your advice and did you make some follow-up to ensure that some of these municipalities are complying with that? And secondly, do you think that is there any lack of understanding in the municipality regarding this section of the act, or things were done there deliberately so, especially after your notice? And lastly, are you part of the team that the Reserve Bank and other entities are investigating this matter? What's your role there? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, Mr. Pillay, this matter was brought to Treasury's attention in October 2016 through the means of a parliamentary question that I submitted to the Minister. Your notification to municipalities only went out in August 2017. That's a full 9 months later, or more actually. Could you explain why the delay and what actions were taken before August 2017? Secondly, was VBS advised of the illegality of their actions? You advised the municipalities that what they were doing was wrong, but was VBS informed that this was wrong, that they were not allowed to accept it in terms of the MFMA? You spoke about consequence management, Mr. Pillay. Could you outline for us the nature of that consequence management? I know section, I think it's 32 of the MFMA, talks about recovery of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. First of all, would this be considered irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure? I'm not sure. You know, is depositing money in a bank expenditure? So what action can and will be taken against municipal officials? And can the councils be held responsible? Is there any mechanism by which we can hold the councils who are actually responsible for oversight of the municipal officials responsible for their actions there as well? This should probably be asked of the Reserve Bank, who I was hoping would have a representative here today. But will action be taken against VBS officials? In your opinion, is what VBS did a Ponzi scheme or pyramid scheme? And can criminal action be taken against them in such a regard? And lastly, with regard to the commissions, I understand that there is a forensic investigation underway. But any deposit by a municipality that draws a commission strikes me as kickbacks, as corruption, as maladministration of the worst kind, both by the bank and by the municipality. And so, can we take action against the lawyers? You indicated that it was lawyers who facilitated these deposits, who should have known better in terms of the law. Can action be taken against them, either criminal, disbarring,
etc. And I would welcome your input on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chapter 10, and good morning, everybody. I just want to firstly welcome the presentation by National Treasurer. Mr. Pillay, when you were presenting, you told us about the Section 76 reports that made you aware that there's something wrong that the municipalities are doing. I just want to find out, how often do you have that report? Because it seems as if you managed to pick up this anomaly late in the year. And I just want to find out also, do these municipalities that are affected by this have top officials with relevant skills, qualifications? And I'm also happy to hear that maybe after the investigation, those who are implicated will have to face the music. And I just hope that you are going to implement that recommendation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable members, I am a bit worried, Chair, because as Honorable Mailham put it correctly, that he sent a question to the minister. In fact, I was watching that while I was still a councillor. And VPS had requested to come and make a deputation at King Cetshwayo District Municipality, where I was a councillor. So I happened to have seen that in Parliament. Then I advised King Cetshwayo to say, no, don't go for this bank because there are issues. And I had videoized, you know, what was happening. And I used that as evidence to actually, you know, say that, no, MM and Council, let's not go for this particular bank. Otherwise, King Cetshwayo will be part of the list that is here. And now I'm looking at the period, because that was 2016. Yeah. You know, the activities are continuing. There's been a question, and Treasury is doing nothing about it until after more than 10 months where councils are being advised that you are doing something wrong. I think if there was a quick or immediate implementation of the advice, the damage would not be this big. If you would have, you know, stepped in immediately, there wouldn't be such a damage. So I'm very worried about that, and I would strongly agree with Mr. Honorable Mailham that, no, give us a reason why would you take a long time when, in fact, you knew very well that what was being done by municipalities were a wrong thing. Why didn't you implement, you know, remedial action as soon as possible? And, Chairperson, it appears there that 900 million is missing. Is Treasury able to trace, you know, because they are able to tell us that in this municipality so much was deposited to VPS. Are they able to tell us out of this 900 million that to say maybe 20 million is from Vembe district or whatever municipality, so that we see which municipalities have suffered the most of this missing 900 million? And on the issue of commissions, Chair, who are those that were paid the commissions? Are the employees of VPS who were going from municipality to municipality to actually urge councils to pay, or are those who pledged to invest with this particular bank? And Chair, the last thing is, on slide number 13, on what Treasury can do, you quote there that there will be no bailouts and so on and so on. But my worry is that, according to your observations, do you councils or municipal officials understand the difference between a mutual bank and any other normal bank, whether it's FNB or whatever? I don't know how to classify them as well. Do they understand fully? Because if they do, well, we may implement that, but I'm worried also about service delivery. Because this is quite a lot of money. And we are even complaining now that there is very little given to municipality. You know, the economy is not doing well and all those reasons. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, Chair, I don't mind waiting, but if I may, just briefly, there was an issue that Mr. Pillay raised where he says that if municipalities violate legal requirements, National Treasury has enforcement mechanisms, including stopping grant transfers in terms of Section 216 of the Constitution. These municipalities that are listed here are amongst the worst performing municipalities in the country. They are the most financially distressed municipalities in the country. They are municipalities that have budget deficits, that have approved budget deficits. Surely the worst thing that we could do in these cases would be to stop grant funding to those municipalities. You'd basically be saying, well, you've put all your money into a bank, we're going to cut off what little you were going to get from National Treasury anyway, so now you've got nothing. Surely that would be the absolute worst kind of solution to this. We need to put people in there to sort out the systems. We need to put people in there to give those municipalities the capability of financial management and budgeting and the like, rather than saying, well, we're going to cut off your funds completely.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to join the honourable members who have spoken about appreciating the slides. I too think they do provide some good framework for engagement. But having said that, Chairperson, I want to move on and raise the following questions. I want to start where Honorable Ngwetsi left off about VBS as a mutual bank. It would be very useful for Treasury just to clarify the kinds of banks we have, and especially this kind. I was also very disturbed by the fact that you're saying that the Reserve Bank lightly regulate these institutions. I find it worrying, I mean, given the fact that we have this problem. If that can just be briefly explained. The second question that I want to raise, Chairperson, really relates to the question of the history, not the detail, but surely it can't be a coincidence that all of these banks, all of these municipalities, invested or put their funds in VBS. It can't be a coincidence. What year did this happen? What are the months? What are the dates? Do we have any information? I mean, in this regard, so the issue can become a bit clearer. Because I can't just see this as a coincidence. Surely, because you've been interacting with the situation, you must be having some clue, some idea. The The other question really relates to the question of the total amount of money invested or put into the bank by municipalities, and the whole question of the total losses. What are the losses? I know that you have mentioned about 900 million rands, but is there a possibility that this figure may actually be an understatement of the actual situation? Of course, the other issue is that there's an abnormal growth of 250%. Why was this not picked up earlier? And then there's a question of rescue of BBS. I noted that we are saying that there is a principle, and that general principle is no bailout. The issue that I really want to raise under this is this the end of the bank? I'm sure you've thought about this, and I'm sure it has arisen in your engagement and interaction with the bank itself. Then there's a question of law enforcement agencies. Is investigation happening? If so, what is the progress to date? If not, if there are no investigations at all, why is this the case? Given, I'm sure, similar experiences that and similar situations. On the question of prosecution, is there work being done in this direction or anticipated? Are there key timelines? And if so, what are these? And on the question of the stakeholders, have they taken any action with regard to this question? And if not, in your own understanding of the situation, why not? Are there other implications? Financially, economically, social, other. That they have also looked into. Now, the question of protecting the poor, comes out as a very, very important issue. And this issue speaks also to the question of the rescue. But also raises the broader question of how this matter has affected not just municipalities out there and communities, but organizations such as the Stockfels and Peril Societies and so on. So it may just be useful to get your understanding of this and to what extent is this an issue in the ongoing work that you're doing around this specific question?
my question is whether there is a rule in the department, in the treasury, which requires, compels municipalities to disclose the institutions they are actually investing with before starting the process of investing. Because if that was the case, then the treasury would have picked up from the very beginning and sort of told them to refrain from banking with such institutions. Thank you.
May I invite then the treasurer to assist?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members. I think these are all excellent and relevant questions. Our colleagues from COCTA deals with some part of the competencies of municipal managers and CFOs and have done research on that. I think they will be able to comment on some of that. Let me also help the committee. My role in the Treasury is largely on the municipal side. The work for VBS and the broader supervision over all the banks is done by SARB, South African Revenue Bank, South African Reserve Bank. So that separation allows for certain oversight, and some of the responses is that I can provide is what I have knowledge of. So it's not as if I have all the details on that. So the number of questions that were asked are like twofold, in a sense. Some relate to the VBS itself and its operations and the regulatory framework that covers a mutual bank, and others relate to a municipality, and others is the regulatory framework that responds to municipalities. So I think if we can maybe also engage from that context, but we'll make an attempt amongst the three of us to try and respond to as best we can. Okay, so thank you, Chair. So let me start, if I can, on some of them, and you will forgive me if some of them are not fully responded to, which we could also continue to do some research on, because this is currently in motion. Most of the issues that questions that were raised are either being investigated, further information is being sought, given the scenario. But I think maybe let's also try and understand and get the committee right, in the background in our understanding as well. We don't have insight into the municipal system itself, the IT financial system, like you have in the national and provincial departments. Okay, so I think let's please put that on the table because it's very important. If that was the case, then your early warning monitoring system would pick up things. We are beholding on municipalities who have many different type systems, and they manage the system independently themselves, where we then get information from municipalities through structured reporting. Now, we've, over the time, continuously improved the reporting framework. The regulatory framework that supported municipalities was also premised on some of the principles that I mentioned earlier. So when we come to this committee or other committees and we wish to regulate a municipality, the first thing committee says and others and during comment period is you're over-regulating. So we say, okay, we can't do that because we were beholden on committee members, and a big part of that is the role of provincial legislatures here and provincial government that we have not addressed, and I think we need to address that because it's a clear role, first-line oversight where it must come from. So having put that scenario out there, so we understand the role that we can play as Treasury together with COCTA and SAGA. The issues that are now coming up, and I think the work that we are doing collectively with COCTA through our bilateral engagements and our collaborative approach to assisting municipalities and supporting them, we hope to take some of these forward in a constructive way, being mindful of the social, economic, and other implications. But some of these responses have to got to be premised on some consequence management. If there's no consequence management, and we don't have the legislatures, either the provincial legislatures or municipal councils, who are responsible for taking this consequence management, the responsibility rests there. If they don't take it, we can't do much unless we change the law that allows then others to take responsibilities for certain actions. And I don't think you want that in the democratic system that we are building. So we want to be able to balance this. So when we say this, the response then that we will provide now throughout the engagements, and my colleagues will assist wherever I may have missed out. I've tried to write as fast as I possibly could. There's so many questions, but thank you for them. So the advice that was sent is the first question to municipalities to fund the investments, long-term versus short-term, and the compliance. I think the framework that we've issued, which is the investment regulations, provide the key principle of safety and preservation of public funds over returns. So the higher the return, the bigger the risk. Now that framework was underpinned by the enabling provision in the MFMA, which talks about financial institutions, commercial banks, and others. So we limited it to commercial banks, and here the reason for the presentation around a mismatch is because you can't take short-term borrowing of surplus funds as a bank on the one side, and that's what the Reserve Bank has picked up, and then lend long-term, because you're never going to be able to get the money back as a municipality when you need it. It's like taking example, typical example, you take a bond on your own home. You have a 20-year or a 30-year bond, whichever bond suits you. But the point is, there needs to be a cash flow match against the bond. So if the bank does that, it needs a strong deposit framework. And the regulatory framework that supports that is far more, I think, robust in the commercial bank environment. I may be incorrect, but I think the deposit that commercial banks requires is like over 250 million rand. Olana can correct that if I'm wrong. But for a mutual bank, you need 10 million rand. So that will tell you immediately that there's a higher threshold. And the Basel III and other requirements that the SARB applies is quite stringent to all the other things, to the extent where there's over 1,200 sets of compliance regulation that commercial banks need to go through, which is not there under the VBS. So I've tried to help us understand that the two dynamics that we are now facing in response to some of the questions. So you can't then invest for a short term and expect then to get your returns back in the short term if the bank itself has a profile of lending for long term. So there's a common mismatch there. Then the lack of understanding of the Act and the deliberations. You know, I think the colleagues from COPTA may want to comment further, and I hope they do on the competencies. But what we understand is that all of these MMs and CFOs have got qualifications. And when you read the regulations very carefully, you will see the provision that says it is commercial banks and not mutual banks. So if somebody wants to fluff this around and take us in circles, I think it's a difficult one to answer, but it's very clear what we put out there. So I would suggest that there's no gray area in this. And in keeping with what we were trying to do, we had already issued a circular in 2012 that talks about the investments. Okay, the framework on the regulations, firstly, on the investments, was issued in 2005. So it's in the system since 2005, okay? Right. It doesn't require a response in advance. So every municipality must come to us before they want to invest. Can we invest there? Can't we invest there? It's not there. That's why we have a minimum competency for municipal officials. So they will deal with the matter and advise their councils correctly in terms of council's policy. It's required of a council to have a policy in this regard.
So that will help the structuring, the flow of how investments happen. So the framework then talks about that. So when we talk about understanding of the Act, I think we've done a lot to, in terms of, there's over 192 circulars issued to clarify X, Y, and Z of the Act. Whenever there's an issue that requires, we've done that. So if this needs further elaboration, with pleasure, we will do that. And that's in hindsight of what has happened. So there's no challenge about that. We fully think in the Treasury that the municipal officials understand what the Act's intent was and the framework. So I am not part of the team that's doing the investigation in SARB. SARB is doing it through the curator. They've appointed the curator. So any response and question around the state of the investigation, the extent of it, the other framework that supports that, the actions to be taken thereafter, I'm unable to respond to any of those. Members, I think, will bear with me there. The question then about the parliamentary response on parliamentary questions. Now, there was a response, I think, if my memory serves me, in 2016 that the Honourable Member had raised in Parliament. That also triggered the process of engaging more with municipalities. There was also a response that was submitted, or a request for clarification that was submitted by VBS. Maybe not sure of the exact timeline, but there was, and there was a response provided to VBS that the regulations didn't allow for that investment. So that was, I'm hoping that addresses the question that was raised on that. Why 9 months later is we had to look through the system. And the Section 71 system we have on the reporting of investments is done post, not pre. So you'll never know. Somebody could invest short-term today and withdraw it tomorrow on a 7-day call account, for example, or a 32-day call account, or a 5-day call account. If you check with any commercial banks, you're allowed to do that yourself. So in any system of reporting introduced will have its gaps. There's no two way. We don't have a 24/7 hands on a button that knows all this and information, given what I said earlier. So when we look at what action we've then taken is we've addressed some of that. We've looked at the municipalities that were on our system. We reported to those, or we responded to them, to those municipalities. But I think the timing issue is important that the members have raised, because the timing shows the start date and end date to some of these investments. Some of the investments were in 2015, and as they came due, they were paid. So there was no issue. Like other municipalities that's not on this list had already invested before the time in 2015 or so, but they had already received their returns given that time frame that they had, which we only came to know after the reports were then reviewed and the information was then provided, not before. So what then happened was we then looked at whether this is widespread, and we found that it was not widespread. So the 15 municipalities that we are aware of was then out of the process of engagement. But during that time of the question that was raised and the time that we'd responded to municipalities, we use our facility called the MFMA Help Desk facility that responds to all queries and questions, and we alerted municipal officials around that at that time, to say these are investments that are not in keeping in compliance with regulations. In spite of that, the spike occurred in the investments in this bank. So the issue around consequence in Section 32, I think honorable members will know the framework that is set out on consequence management is largely around municipalities taking its actions. So it's a municipal council through a process that it must follow. The Section 32 is a culmination of that process. So the start of the process is also contained elsewhere, where the municipal manager, the executive mayor, and others must act in a fiduciary responsible way, and so forth and so on. And we have Section 171 of the Act, which talks specifically about consequence management, both procedurally as well as criminal action. And that, again, is brought back to the council to implement, because we're not the employee. Neither is COCTA the employee of municipal officials. It's the council themselves. So the accountability arrangements, if we're keeping the accountability arrangements that's in the constitution in place, then that's how it must work. So I think there's no other way for us to deal with it in any other way. It would be unconstitutional. Now, that consequence management framework has been strengthened. We would like it to be even more strengthened so that the process then unfolds. So when we issued the consequence management and financial misconduct regulation, which we've now trained so many people in municipalities and officials that sometimes we wonder why it's not being implemented. Hopefully the Auditor General will pick up the compliance levels around that regulation. It covers both. It covers the municipal officials on the one side, and it covers the municipal councillors on the other. The municipal councillors' part, if they have anything to do with this, will be reliant on the municipal code of conduct, like the former executive mayor would know. It's in the Systems Act. And the process around senior managers and other officials that is in the process of engagement. That's internal. There's a provision that requires a disciplinary board to be set up in a municipality or shared within a district if the capacity is not there. That has happened. The establishment of those disciplinary boards has happened. The municipal public accounts committees have been established. And we've trained a number of the municipal public accounts committees. We're going further on training there to make sure that the councillors will understand the role and responsibility that they need to play in these investigations and how they arise. So as part of this, unfortunately, when we engage further, the consequence management area is something that can still be improved. And we think by this practices we will, and your oversight and the provincial oversight will help us. Now, some of the questions around expenditure and the way that it's described, yes, in the way we're looking at the way that the definitions are crafted around irregular expenditure, unauthorized and fruitless, and if we have to fix that, let's go on and fix that during the term that's coming up if the opportunity arises. We have a potential to improve the MFMA in certain areas, and we're working with cooperative governance to align that to the Systems Act as well. What action can be taken? I've spoken about that. The notion of a Ponzi scheme and the criminal actions, I can't comment on that. I don't have the details. The criminal procedures and investigations, we've spoken about that, and who's responsible for that. The process that needs to be unfolding is important. If an investigation has to be undertaken, a thorough one has to be, and we will support that. I'm sure the committee members as well will. The financial distress municipalities, I think, you know, we have engaged with our colleagues from COCTA, and the minister has announced, I think, prioritization of 55 municipalities on the distress list to be given some assistance. So together with COCTA, we're working to assist municipalities on the distress list. Now, if this is not on the distress list and we can bring it on the distress list, we will do so. But I'd like us to also comment that it must be a commitment of council. If councils don't commit to do a restructuring or a process of reprioritization, then we will never succeed on the distress list and the issue about how we can engage effectively on that. But we are willing as a Treasury to participate in that list and try and assist those municipalities. I think the other questions on that's been responded, the Section 71 report made aware of, how often you pick it up late in the year was responded to, the top official skills, colleagues from COCTA will respond. The questions on VBS requests and the videos, we'd like to thank that member. At least as a councillor, we wish all councillors could have been in wearing your shoes or your cap. We would have solved this a long time. Thank you, Councillor Wesi. It's very important that we do that, share that experience with others as well as we go along. If you can share that video, it'll be very helpful. We will put it on our website as well, so we will help others along. It's part of the process of supporting each other. Now, the damage is to be seen. I think what is important is we understand that there's conditional grants, there's an equitable share, and their surplus funds through the research that we could provide information on. That's part of this allocation. And some amounts in one of the slides we showed are quite manageable in some municipalities, but others it would not be so manageable. And that's where we need to prioritize some of the interventions that we do need to do with the provinces. We aren't working on tracing every municipality. As a treasury, that's not our responsibility to look at the VBS bank. It's a SARB responsibility, honorable members, to do that audit, and they are doing it at present around tracking the flow of funds that went into and out of. You may have just heard recently that there was a Namibian bank also impacted in this from the press reports that we've seen. So we all see the same press reports. But as the investigation unfolds, in the VBS process, we probably get better information. Who was liable? Who's responsible? Who took what decision? But at the moment, we aren't able to respond to that question. What Treasury can do, I think, is important because we would like to, although we now observed the current situation, there's always scope for improvement. We can use this learning experience to improve where we can collectively in all our work. Now, we wanted, you know, there's a sense about do officials understand the difference and the service delivery and the economy. I think it's critical that we must all apply our minds to how it's going to impact on services. So when we come together with our colleagues in COCTA, we would hope to work through this list, put them on the priority list as well, and try and figure out how best to do some restructuring, given the principles we mentioned earlier. Because if we can get that right, there's an opportunity. But it's inevitable that some projects will have to be delayed. From where we sit and the number of financial recovery plans we've helped assisted municipalities with, there's often pain and sweat that comes with it. And the committee's support will be appreciated there. The slides that we talked about, the frameworks, thank you, Honorable Masondo. The difference and clarification of the type of banks, I think, you know, if more needs to be done, we're willing to do that. There's no problem. But it's, from my understanding, there's now cooperative banks, there's the commercial banks, and there's mutual banks, but my colleague Olano can come in if allowed to also explain a bit more, since he's quite well versed with the whole banking framework. Is that okay, Olano? You can come in, right? Olano. I think the assertion that it's a coincidence that all municipalities invested. We are understanding that there was a concerted effort for people to invest in VBS. From which side and where, we don't know. But we are aware, as Honorable Member was saying, that there were people going out requesting investments from municipalities. So it's coming from the committee itself. We wish we could get that information as well to understand where this is coming from. But we do know that the 15 that we have on the list, they continue to invest in this municipality, in the bank, since we already issued the communication to make it clear if it was not clear. Honourable Member, the month, year and dates, we extracting all that information, and I think as it unfolds, we can make that available if required, whatever we have available. Okay, we can do that. It will be a lengthy descriptor of all the information, but we are aware that the timing of that was around 2015, 2016, and early 2017. But in essence, the numbers may not be, if we give it to the committee, it must be clear that there's still checks that has to be done. And I think the Auditor General is also looking at that during this audit cycle. So it's something that we have some information which we can share with you. Okay, so Honourable Member, that helps the dates, times, and incidents. Okay, the total amount invested and the loss. Now, I think we mustn't mix the two. The one is the amount of municipalities invested. That's over 1.5 billion. That's sitting, that cannot be accessed out of the system, out of the VBS. The 900 million we saw was about what the curator has pointed out on the VBS side. So there's two sets of numbers. Let's clarify the numbers. 15 municipalities had invested 1.5 billion at the end of the period, yet still locked in the VBS system. Okay, they cannot access the money. 15 municipalities. Right. Okay. So that's just a clarification of that point. So we are clear on that. The spike that we put up was shown from the research that was done, and that is the timelines. It's in that graph to show when it started and when it ended. That's the broader picture. The questions on rescue, I think that again relates to the South African Reserve Bank process that is unfolding around the extent. But from what I understand, there's certain protection measures brought in for the smaller investor, the poor type investor, the funeral funds, and so forth. I think there's some protection in there that's been brought in by SARB, South African Reserve Bank. Around prosecutions, I think the law must take its course. I'm hoping, and like you are, that the consequence management will then follow after the investigations are completed. But I'm not in a position to respond on timelines, dates, or when and who and how. I don't have insight into the investigation reports. Stakeholders and any action and why not and other implications, I think here is part of the mitigation measures we need to look at collectively as a solution. How do we move forward from this point? The point that I mentioned earlier, which would be of assistance, is we will work together with COCTA, SALGA as well, to try and find the solution around this that will offer the less pain, but there will be pain. And the pain can be through service delivery, it can be through organizational restructuring, it can be deferring of certain things. You know, at some point people may not want to hear this, but it's very important that if we do a restructuring, we do a full restructuring, it may have to be certain functions that will have to be either stopped or stalled or delayed. There may have to be certain tariffs increased to make good the resources along the way to operate effectively. There may be issues of certain projects that will have to be delayed that cannot be implemented because of the cash flow difficulties. So these are some factors. The other would be, and the most drastic would be, and we all know, over 30% to 40% of a municipal budget is made up of official salaries. That maybe in the next round of negotiations, those municipalities may have to go with the support of SALGA and others in the room to say, we cannot afford any increases. We'll have to look at all possible sides and angles to try and assist to restructure the municipality back, because in some cases it's going to be very severe, In other cases, it will be less severe. So based on that and based on each case by case. So, honorable member, yes, there will likely be some social, some economic, some financial, and a mixture of issues that will arise out of this. Protecting the poor and I think the rescue, I think that is all uppermost in our minds. For those with the means to deal with matters, of course, they probably can find a way to deal with it. But for the poor, we'll have to find a mechanism within the framework that we need to collectively develop on how we assist, again, on a case-by-case basis. So, members and colleagues, I think maybe if I can just ask if we can ask Olano to maybe explain the different type of banks, if he is able to, at the top of his head, and our colleague from COCTA as well, through you, Chair, if that's allowed. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, let me first qualify what I'm going to say. So I would obviously not be talking on behalf of the SA Reserve Bank, who would be best placed to talk about bank regulation. But because I was with the Treasury for 17 years and I was part of the financial sector policy unit until recently, which is last year, I might be able to just shed some light in terms of the different types of banks. So Mr. Pillay is correct. In essence, you have two types, which we sort of classify as first-tier banking and second-tier banking. Your first-tier bankings will be your large commercial banks. So your standard banks, your FNBs, your net banks. You will then have a lower-tier bank system, and within that second tier, you can actually stretch it to the extreme end where you sort of find your cooperative banks. And before that, you will find your cooperative financial institutions. So they are not yet banks, and therefore not yet regulated as banks. Then as you move up the scale, you will find your post-bank type of banks, which essentially take deposits but would not be engaging in lending. And that's the key feature of banking, is whether a bank on lends deposits and to what extent. And based on that, as a regulator, you will then devise a regulatory framework, which in essence, and to its bare minimum, will talk to how much capital a financial institution or a bank needs to hold to be able to absorb any losses which it might experience. And those losses can come in various forms. It could be me and you defaulting on our loan. And remember, in essence, if someone defaults, essentially it means they cannot service their bond, which means as a bank, you are not able to repay depositors' money. So based on that model, you will then say, if it's a large bank, it should then hold certain amount of capital. That capital would, in most instances, be larger than the capital you'd require from a smaller bank or a second-tier bank. So this is what Mr. Pillay was referring to the 250 million and 10 million. So essentially the capital is there to absorb any losses that a bank might experience. So when Mr. Pillay said mutual banks are lightly regulated, and just to clarify that, he doesn't necessarily mean or say that mutual banks were, for example, overlooked in terms of compliance. But what I think he's referring to is that you wouldn't be asking a mutual bank to hold the same capital as you would ask of a first-tier bank, because the risks associated with a smaller bank or a mutual bank would not be the same as a large bank. So they would still be regulated, and the Reserve Bank would still make sure that they comply to the best of their ability. but they would not necessarily be complying with the same sets of regulations and standards as you would expect of a first-tier bank. And I suppose that's the reason why Treasury would be uncomfortable with municipalities investing in a mutual bank, because they wouldn't be subject to the same standards. Chair, I don't know if that helps. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. I thought I should just present some perspective of SAGA on the matter, if the committee allows that. We welcome the presentation from National Treasury. A few things that we would like to highlight. Firstly, we agree with Honorable Masondo that it seems there's been just flagrant disregard of the law on various fronts, whether it be within the bank or from the municipalities concerned. And we would like this matter to be prioritized by the various law enforcement agencies, so that those who are responsible for this, they're taken to book and they face the full might of the law. The second thing is that we don't agree with any view of stoppage of grants to the municipalities affected. The residents have already paid a price for this due to reckless actions of some of the officials and the bank itself, and it wouldn't be warranted to further punish residents. It is worth noting that, Honourable Chair, there's a list which has been distributed of municipal managers and CFOs. But the question with this is that, were these the same people who were there at the time when these transactions were entered into? So in other words, we could be looking at the list of people that were not there when these transactions were there. And if we want to punish municipalities due to actions of people that may not be in the system, it will also not be fair. But we nevertheless agree with the whole spirit of consequence management. Several issues, Honorable Chair, as well, on Section 71 reports. The question is this, that how were we not all able to pick this up much earlier? And reference has been made to Section 71 reports. When you look at the legislation, there's a requirement that these are submitted to provincial treasuries and national treasury almost on a monthly basis. As part of strengthening monitoring and oversight and support that all of us must play, we believe as SAGA that perhaps there should be a wider distribution of these Section 71 reports so that we strengthen our early warning systems all across national and provincial government and SAGA. So currently, Section 71 reports are only distributed to the treasuries. COFTA is not in that distribution loop. And we believe that as part of strengthening monitoring and oversight, these reports should also be, there should be a statutory requirement for COFTA to also receive this, because COFTA only comes in when there's at the end of it, when there's already a crisis. We also believe that as part of SAGA's mandate to support municipalities, it may be helpful that these reports are also distributed to SAGA, perhaps on a quarterly basis, so that we can help in analyzing and picking up areas of difficulty. The other area, Honorable Chair, is in terms of where else would these reports of investment have been disclosed. It would also have been disclosed in annual financial statements. It's in your Section 71 reports, also in your annual financial statements. And some of the questions which are asked is that why is it that the AG did not pick this up? Because this is something that has been ongoing from about 2015. And we may want to have a conversation with the AG's office so that they pay a bit more attention to this type of things. And, we don't react years later when we are in this crisis currently. Yeah, So the firm proposal from SAFA, from SAGA, therefore, is to have a much wider distribution of the Section 700 reports to COCTA and SALGA, pay very close attention to these Section 700 reports, also strengthen the ability of your internal audit structures in municipalities to pick these things up so that they can be more timely intervention. So just remember, to put a point of emphasis once more, is that we want this matter to be thoroughly investigated, action to be taken, and that we wouldn't support any move which will involve stoppage of current funding to the affected municipalities.
Yeah, thank you very much, DG.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think we have circulated the qualifications of the CFOs and MMs in the affected municipalities, but I think the Honourable Mayor there has put a context to it, and of course we agree that it does not mean these people are the ones who are, that would be detected through investigations and so on. But I think what is key is that this is just in the normal course of events. These are the kinds of qualified people that the municipalities engage with. You can see from what we got from them, these are very qualified people, and there's nothing that suggests that they would not understand the MFMA, or they would not be able to differentiate between a building society and the actual commercial bank. So they are highly qualified people. When it comes to the issue of grants, of course, we share what the Honourable Member said as a position of SALGA as well, that we have to look at what do municipalities use the grants for. For example, some of them have deposited in the VBS equitable share grants. Now, equitable share is an unconditional grant. It's used for salaries, for infrastructure maintenance, and so on. Now, once you withhold that one, you're creating chaos within the municipality, because then salaries may not be paid and so on. But the other grants like MIC, which also have been deposited by some municipalities, again, that is service delivery on the ground. So if you stop it, then you are basically punishing the communities. So I think the approach should be to say, okay, if we continue allowing those grants, we have to say who is going to manage them. You know, you put those kinds of mechanisms so that there's proper management of those, and we are sure that they will do what they are intended to do with those grants. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much, DG. Can we proceed, Honourable Members? Ngwezi?
Thank you, Chair. You say, Chair, our DG is saying these MMs that are here and CFOs are highly qualified people. But the question is, are they highly qualified in the field of local government or not? Let me just take one or two. In the Gauteng province, in Merafong City, local municipality, you have somebody who has microbiology there. That is in the science field, not in the local government field, and is the municipal manager. Not unless he has microbiology plus something else, after, you know, like capacitating himself in when he was employed in the local government. No. But if this is the only qualification, I'm seeing a disaster. And in fact, I would not be, you know, shocked if that municipality is poorly performing. You go, for example, to, you know, some, they've got BEd owners. They are teachers like myself, and they are running municipalities. Some are engineers. A mechanical engineer is a CFO. It's a disaster. And in fact, if I would have wanted to put a question, will be because in many municipalities, you know, I know that it is the responsibility of council to employ. But then circulars, you know, information is provided to COCTA, you know, for concurrence. If what is the response from COCTA when he received it, we have got such people servicing our communities in COCTA. So I would really think that our DG must really, you know, withdraw that. These are not highly qualified, not all of them are highly qualified in the field of local government. Some of them are irrelevant here. Yeah.
No, I thought that, let us take it to the context. The point that was raised that the learned people, they know the different banks. They know commercial banks, they know cooperative banks, that I think Honorable Matsipa is going to start, cooperative banks. They know also mutual banks. Therefore, when they deposited the money, they knew exactly what they were doing. They were not ignorant of what was happening. Well, in terms of civil engineers becoming what is a separate issue, and then I think we can discuss that next meeting and see how else we can do. And I just think, colleagues, we must move. If there are no other strategic questions that we want to put, we can then move on. Melham.
Chair, I'm sorry, but I disagree with Honorable Mgwezi here, because the point is that not only are these people qualified in different fields, but if you have a look at, for example, Dr. J.S. Morocco municipality, both the CFO and the municipal manager are missing. Now, we've seen in audit report after audit report, we've had the Auditor General here tell us that where there are high levels of vacancies, we see dysfunctional municipalities. So the question is, who then signed off on depositing this money into a mutual bank? That's the problem here. And I agree with Honorable Mgwezi, but I also agree with you that these are learned people, and they should know the difference between a mutual bank and a commercial bank. The problem is that they didn't. Either they didn't know, or they deliberately acted in a way that then was illegal. And if so, and in fact, ignorance isn't a defense under the law, so in either case, they are responsible for their actions, and they must be held accountable for their actions. Whether it's the MM, or the CFO, or the mayor, or the councillors, we must call those municipalities before us. And I think Mr. Pillay made a very good point. I think that the follow-up to this meeting is to have each of those municipalities in front of this portfolio committee telling us what consequence management they are putting in place, what disciplinary action they're putting in place, what they are doing to recover the funds from the individuals that were responsible, and how they are going to meet their service delivery obligations, given that they've lost such a huge percentage of their operating revenue. I mean, the one that stood out for me was, well, obviously Bembe District Municipality, but Greater Giani. 52% of their, or 54% of their operating revenue has been deposited in VBS. And that means that they're only going to get between 10 cents and 40 cents in the rand back, but nobody's quite sure when that will be. So it might be in 5 years' time when the curator finishes his investigations and determines how much money. It might be never. So the point is that Greater Giani and the residents of Greater Giani, and we were there, Chair, you'll recall that in 2015, we went through Greater Giani, and you'll know that it's one of the poorest areas of our country. It's an area that is radically in need of upliftment. The residents there are going to suffer because some incompetent, and I use the word deliberately, official, took a decision to put the money into a bank in which they were not legally permitted to do. And so we need to call them here before this committee and hold them responsible.
Chair, I think let's not try as a committee to justify or become the law enforcement in this matter. What we need to do is to appreciate this report and this information that is in front of us. That's one, Chair. The second fact that we cannot dispute here, money for the poor is lost. That is the second fact that we must note it. The third point, Chair, is that Treasury has won certain learned people through this action. So these people must account in one way or other. Through the legal channel, as a committee, we are concerned about that. And lastly, these learned members that are sitting here, whether they were not there or they were there, but the fact of the matter, they have channeled money after being advised. They were continuous. I don't know who was he or she. That's not matters to us a lot. But at the end of the day, because we know the law enforcement will come out on that. And the last point, Chair, that we must note, is that money was deposited on a short loan. Money that was meant to pay a short loan, it was invested to be in a long-term period. How were they thinking that they would be recouping this money to run the project of the day-by-day issues? Those things were not happening, Chair. So that's why I'm saying we note this report. It's unfortunate that it has happened in this way, but whoever is responsible, found responsible on that, we will appreciate as a committee to get this report as a matter of urgent. I also support the recommendation of those that they said we must see some of this money so that we can discuss the way forward, because we cannot punish the poor twice. Their money is lost, we are told it's not there in the bank. It means it's somewhere. Then we will appeal to Treasury to ensure that try to speed up this process so that if this money, to block this money, to leave out the country, so that when the law enforcement is dealing with it, at least we might find some of it. There's nothing here that really is sinistical. A professional that were doing a certain scam and they professionally did that successfully. I think that's what we need to know, Teacher. But I know our law enforcement must bring them here one day.
Indeed, Jefferson. I just hope that it's just a hope that I want to express that the law enforcement agencies, NPA, and so on, they are doing something. They're not just waiting for this report to come out. I just hope that they are doing something.
mic is not on. Can't hear. Sherry, the mic is not on. The chairperson's mic is not on. It is going on.
I'm not sure why Selga is presenting on the Municipal Councillors Pension Fund. We asked for the Municipal Councillors Pension Fund and its curator to present on the Municipal Councillors Pension Fund. I don't want to hear from Selga on their opinion on what's happening at the MCPF. I want to hear from the MCPF what's going on. Yeah, Chair, again, I don't want to hear from Selga. I want to hear from the MCPF. I want to hear it firsthand. Chair, my point is this. Selga are going to be reporting on what they are doing. Can we not hear it directly from the curator? Can the curator not present to us and tell us what's going on at the MCPF, rather than Selga tell us what's going on at the MCPF? Or the Registrar of Pension Funds tell us what's going on at the MCPF, rather than Selga tell us what's going on at the MCPF?
Thank you very much, Chair, and once again, good morning to morning to members of the Portfolio Committee. Indeed, the invitation that was extended to us was not to give a Selga view. Indeed, it's correct, Chair. We are merely going to sketch the background so that we fully brief the Portfolio Committee around what are the developments around the pension fund, what informs the developments. We have also from our side indeed extended an invitation to the curators who are here. Should there be direct issues that the committee would want to engage with, that indeed there's an opportunity to do so, and the curators have been briefed accordingly. But to bring everyone onto the same page, Chairperson, the importance is that there is a councillor's pension fund. It has been created to specifically look at the interests of municipal councillors across the different municipalities that we have in the country, and that you can see the movements around the fund in that prior to 2016, maybe a step back for the benefit of members of the Portfolio Committee, is that it is within the discretion of councillors to participate in a pension fund or not. So it's not an obligation on them to participate. However, 65% of municipal councillors prior to 2016 exercised their discretion to participate in a pension fund and chose to subscribe to the Municipal Councillors Pension Fund. That figure reduced post the 2016 election and is sitting at around 53% of councillors currently participating in the Municipal Councillors Pension Fund. There are councillors who participate in other pension fund arrangements outside of the Councillors Pension Fund. The fund itself has been around, as I've said, and has gone through a number of administrators. We had the Joint Municipal Pension Fund administrators prior to 1988 up to 2003. They were replaced by Akani Fund administrators up to 2008. In 2008, APSA administrators took over the administration of the fund up to end of 2011.
and then Moriting Wealth Managers took over from 2011 up to, or early 2012 up to 2015, when the fund became self-administered. The affairs of the fund, it's in the responsibility of a board of the fund. In terms of the rules of the fund, the board comprises of 13 individuals, 9 of which of them are provincially elected member trustees, 1 per province. 2 of them are appointed by the employer body, which is SALGA, and then there are 2 independent experts. So the 13-person board runs the affairs of the fund, and the term of office is a 5-year term of office linked to the municipal term of office. So after every municipal elections, a new board will be elected, and then the 2 appointments are made in terms of the independent trustees as well as the employer trustees. Now, what has happened following the 2016 local government elections is that the term of office of the board came to an end, and instead of having a new board appointed, the FSB decided to intervene in the affairs of the fund. And by intervening, the FSB appointed a Section 26 board. And it's a 4-person board that was appointed from 23 February 2017. And that board was specifically directed to investigate allegations of mismanagement within the fund. And this fund itself, from a SALGA point of view, because we have been closely monitoring this fund, is that it has been nearly 10 years since this fund has been embroiled in allegations of mismanagement. So from a SALGA point of view, we indeed supported the FSB intervention into the affairs of the fund, and with the appointment of the Section 26 board, which inspected the affairs of the fund but also assessed if there were any losses suffered as a direct result of mismanagement and allegations of theft or fraud within the fund. While the findings of the inspection indicated that indeed, or confirmed that indeed there was maladministration and mismanagement of the fund, there were serious governance challenges within the fund, and as such, the Section 26 board approached the High Court to place the MCPF under curatorship. That application was tabled on the 19th of December 2017 in the High Court, and in fact it confirmed that at the time provisional curators are to be appointed. Now, what then happened on the ground, Chair, in municipalities and members of the fund, is that they started asking questions. So the Councillors Pension Fund, through their curators, then sent a communication to municipalities, which we saw ourselves, and it confirmed the court order. It also confirmed the appointment of the 2 curators, one of them who is with us today, Chair. It also invited interested parties to come forward and indicate whether they wish to object to the appointment of the curators being finalized on the 19th of March this year. So as SALGA, we went back, we sought legal advice based on the outcry from members and from municipalities on whether there are grounds to object against the final curatorship order being confirmed, and secondly, what is the impact of the appointment of the curator. We did that work and ultimately concluded, Chair, that the appointment of the curators is indeed in the best interest of both the fund holistically but also as members. And we supported the appointment of the curators. We were also quite happy, as was communicated to members and municipalities who had requested us to provide guidance, that their benefits have not been negatively affected, and that the only difference within the fund is that instead of a board of trustees, there is a curator that, or curators that are appointed, and therefore we have asked the members to draw comfort from that fact that at least what will happen is that the affairs of the fund will be well looked after. We had engaged with the curators based on the concerns raised, and the curators will confirm this, Chair, in their own input, is that there's a lot of strides that have already been made by the curators. I'll ask them to reflect on that, particularly in ascertaining the wrongdoing within the fund, as well as some of the key measures that have been taken, including engagements that the curators have had with members. And we have packaged, as part of the presentation to date, what engagements the curators have had with members across the respective provinces. And to date, they have already gone to 7 of the 9 provinces. The last point, Chair, we would want to make before allowing the curators to add, particularly on the work that they have done to date, is that there are serious negative perceptions around the Councillors' Pension Fund. We pick that up as we interact with our municipalities and we interact with councillors. Serious negative perceptions around the fund, and many have moved their threats to action by stopping to contribute towards the fund. So we have seen an increased number of councillors saying, while the rules do not allow us to withdraw unless we stop being councillors, but we will stop contributing. So there are nearly 600 of the 4,800 members that have stopped their contributions to the fund, and they have communicated that to SALGA, that we are stopping to contribute to the fund based on the negative perceptions around the fund. There are also members that want to withdraw from the fund. They've communicated that to us as SALGA. We have met with the curators. We have indicated to them that these are the communiques that we are receiving from municipalities saying that they want their councillors to not only stop contributing but also withdraw or alternatively transfer their benefits within the fund to another fund of their choice. Our view is that whilst the curator will do its work, it may not be in the best interest of this fund to, once things have been fixed, for a new board to be appointed in the same way we have done it in the past, because our view is that at the crux of the difficulties experienced by the fund is governance. And the Board of Trustees in its current form and shape in terms of the rule is at the bottom of this. So we can't proceed as usual, and we need to take a different approach, particularly as it relates to the governance of the fund. A proposal we have made based on a resolution that was taken by municipalities is that we want to explore the merger of this fund with the Public Office Bearers Pension Fund, so that there's a single fund that would look at the interests of all public office bearers across the 3 spheres of government as it relates to pension benefits. So the 9,306 councillors that we have in the local government space should all become members of the Public Office Bearers Pension Fund, and those that have benefits sitting in the councillors' pension fund could then transfer those benefits to the Public Office Bearers Pension Fund. And it will have a number of related benefits to it, other than having a single fund for all 3 spheres, but it would also limit the costs that are linked to having a single fund for all public office bearers. Chair, having indicated that, Chair, I will, if you would allow, ask the curator to add, particularly on the work that they have done today. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Lance.
Thank you, Chair. I must just apologize from our side, because I think there was a bit of confusion. If we had known that we have to do a full presentation, we maybe would have done it differently. But the reality is, I'm one of the appointed curators. I am here, and I will take you through what we've done since our appointment. We were appointed by court Justice High Court appointment on the 19th of December 2017. It was a joint appointment. Can I take it? It was a joint appointment. I was appointed together with Sophie Pepe Kakana as joint provisional curators in December. What we did is immediately after our appointment, we took control of all the assets, cash, investments of the MCPF and made sure that those investments and cash were in safe hands. What we also did is we started a process of trying to visit as many municipalities as possible to find out what the concerns with councillors were in the main. It took us, in the 3 months since we've been appointed, I think the number of municipalities, as is shown on the slide screen there, we've managed through the assistance of SALGA to visit those municipalities, some individual municipalities, others on a provincial level. And I think for now we have managed to stabilize and bring some calm to a lot of those municipalities, as we realize the problem in the past with MCPF was that there was either no or very little communication with councillors. We also placed a short moratorium after our appointment on the payment of benefits. Although we realized that the payment of beneficiaries was one of the most important issues that we had to deal with, we were not happy with the verification processes at MCPF. We instituted our own processes, and this, for example, would be bank account verification, verification of ID, proper tax assessments, before payments are made to beneficiaries. But this moratorium was only in place for about 2 weeks. After that, we lifted the moratorium. We couldn't also, during the period of our provisional appointment, up until the 19th of March, when we were appointed finally, take major decisions in the fund. At that time, our main focus was on stabilizing the fund and making sure that the funds that are there are safe. The order was made final on the 19th of March. Two issues while we were on our roadshows with councillors was the one of them was the issue of benefit statements. We made it very clear to councillors that they should not rely on the benefit statements that they had received previously that did not come from our office. So we went through a process, and we will be sending benefit statements to all councillors at the end of April, which is at the end of this week. Benefit statements will be sent to councillors. This will give us then an opportunity to sit down and interrogate these benefit statements with councillors. The problem that we discovered just after our appointment at MCPF was issues around service providers, what service providers were charging MCPF, and we called all service providers in and we asked them to re-present to us and bring new proposals on how they can deliver the same service at a better rate. And I can clearly say today that about 80% of those service providers have come back to us with revised rates, because the issue around self-administration at MCPF, it's an expensive exercise to manage. I think Lance mentioned the various other parties who have been there as administrators. As curators, we've had various discussions on which route would be the best to follow. I think that we will do in consultation with the FSCA, and SALGA and the councillors going forward. Many of the councillors, as was quite rightly mentioned by Salga, are not interested in carrying on with their contributions to the MCPF. I can understand those concerns. Apart from issues around communication, the fund has also not been performing very well. If you look at the performance from 2016 up until now, it's been a downward trend in terms of the performance of the fund. And then the other major issues that we investigating and that have already been reported to places like the Law Society and the NPA are issues around investments that were made at a time in vacant property that was purchased, never registered into the name of the MCPF. I think the purchase consideration was 137 million rand, which to us are highly inflated prices. But before we even get there, the issue is that these properties were paid for, but they were never registered or transferred into the name of the MCPF or any other related company. We're busy engaging, and that is a litigious matter now, with the parties that have been involved in that transaction. At this point in time, we're not looking at getting the properties back, because those properties, as I said, in a fund that has a cyclical nature, that you, every 5 years you have members changing, we can't understand why that type of investment was made. The investment was made, I think, 3 years ago. No development has taken place on the property, and we don't think that development will take place in the next 3 years on that property because of the issues that they have around municipal approval around that property. So it's an issue that we're still investigating, and we will be reporting back to court and to the FSCA on what our findings are around the issues of the investment in property. The other two properties that we invested in, the one is a property situated in Midrand in Pretoria. It is where our head office is. We see some value in that property. Another property was bought in the same area where the properties that I referred to earlier was bought. At least there's some value in that property. But we're busy looking, together with our investment advisors, at the whole investment policy at MCPF, because currently it doesn't comply with Regulation 28 that sets out the caps and the various asset classes that one can invest in. So we're busy revising and looking at that policy. As I said, we have only been appointed as curators for the last 3.5 months. We feel that we've achieved a lot in terms of getting to the various municipalities, but there is still a lot of work ahead going forward. How long do we see this process lasting? We don't want a process that's going to last 7-10 years without results. We want to be in a position to proceed, whether it's civil on a civil nature or on a criminal nature with certain entities or individuals, still this year. We believe we've got enough evidence to proceed on that basis. And now that the final order has been made and we've been appointed as the final liquidators, the final curators, it's just given us more power to move forward more speedily.
Chair, thanks. So if I could just come in, and I would not repeat the points which were made. So, Chair, that's true. The trigger for this curatorship, because as FSCA, we have to answer the question, why the curatorship? Because curatorships are upon the request of the FSCA. There were some problems in the fund, as the curator and Salga have highlighted. And the trigger was very much this investment into immovable property. And indeed, as we go through our assessments, it does seem as if there were some breaches in terms of those investments. And luckily, we had a whistleblower who actually alerted us on some of these challenges way back in 2015. So, Chair, it's important to indicate that curatorship generally is the last remedial action. It's never the default, because curatorship can be expensive. It can take a long time, and you have seen some of the issues which have sprung up in the past around curatorships. I have had discussions with Mr. Damons where we have indicated that we would like to see this curatorship being wrapped up as soon as possible. So we're not keen in having long curatorships. And obviously that will depend on the issues which are uncovered as they go through their assessments. Secondly, Chair, I'm glad SALGA has touched upon this issue around consolidation, and because also I've got my Treasury colleagues here, there is merit in considering how best we can achieve efficiencies within the municipality retirement industry space. So currently we're sitting with around 44 municipal retirement funds. As regulator, we think the smaller the better, because of economies of scale, so you are able to spread costs better if you have a wider pool of members. And that's one of the issues which has come up under MCPF, that after they decided to be self-administered, there was this surge in costs. And remember, ultimately, those costs are borne by members. And that is why, for the regulator, it's very important to ensure that whatever costs are incurred, they are fair, and to the best of our ability, to ensure that they are minimal. Because ultimately, it's the members who bear this cost. So we would like to see if we can't tease the idea of consolidation in the sector, and we will engage with SALGA in terms of taking that issue forward. Chair, on performance of the fund, you know, this goes beyond municipality retirement funds, and because I was also part of the team at Treasury which was responsible for retirement reforms in the industry, there are issues in terms of how service providers treat retirement funds, whether it's cost issues, whether it's also communication, a very important point raised by Mr. Damons. Not all funds communicate with their members, which is a problem. As members, you ought to receive regular benefit statements telling you exactly how much you have accumulated in your funds. And a number of funds struggle with that. And as the regulator, we have taken it upon ourselves to try and enforce and come up with standards which will force funds to communicate regularly to their members. So I think from the regulator side, we are looking broadly also at these various issues. And we will be working closely with the curator to ensure that we can resolve whatever issues in the fund as quickly as possible. We certainly don't want to see a long-standing curatorship. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, thanks so much. May I appreciate the report from SALGA, and also to be the one that are highlighting some of these issues that we are really, most of the time, organization would not want to highlight it out. And I appreciate that the Treasury to be part of this meeting, because this is another thing that is, it might be similar to what we have been talking about in the previous discussion. I'm saying this, Chair, that
while I'm on the floor, Chair, I will exploit that that platform also just to raise one or two issues, not for Treasury to respond, that also on the previous discussion to ensure that they also deepen the investigation, not also deal with the issue of the bank here, also see how far deep it is, because we were told that certain provinces, municipalities were contributing on the basis that were told by the, either by the provincial leadership or it was an instruction from there. This raised the question, Chair, the issue of the SOEs there, we don't know how deep also may be found into this crisis and the department thereof. I will appeal to colleagues not to get frustrated, because these, all these matters are same issues of financial. And secondly, Chair, on this one, I just want to firstly to know from the curatorship that are there that I'm told there are almost 600 people that are withdrawing now from the fund. Is there any other fund that has been created, at least so for these people not just not to contribute anything? Because when they go, when they get out, they will be a burden of the government as well. So we must know if either they will withdraw from one fund at least to one to another fund currently. Is there any other means that they were prepared for them, not just to throw money and they use as they wish? Because that must be discouraged and it must be stopped, and it's illegal for members to charge their pension fund in that fashion. Secondly, I want also to understand the rules. Were they relaxed? Because we are told that the rules there were relaxed. A verification and other things were not, were they not done purposely so that people can cash, can get to access to the cash easily? If so, we will appeal that the curatorship must find a way to stop this as a matter of agency. The issue of the consolidation of the fund, we also want to appeal and also recommend that. That is one thing that you must firstly, it's a nice, it's not a nice thing to save money, but people must be forced to do so because it's a good thing to do. So we will want also to come up with some recommendation and see how best to do this before end of the term of this current councillors that are there. The other issue, Chair, is the performance of the fund. We would also appreciate if we can get the details of what was happening in this fund. If there were assets that were not even registered under the names of the fund, while the fund is also being regarded as a fund that was poorly performing, what was happening there? The curatorship, I'm happy that you are there, you are dealing with these matters. We will appeal, Chair, that these matters are issues that must be taken as a key issues. And in the performance of the fund, also further, Chair, what were the, if we can get that detail so that we can also see as to what is it that was done there. And the, also the fact of the, okay. Yeah, we wanted to know, Chair, what was happening and why this fund was performing so badly. And these negativities that is being raised on the fund, that people must not contribute, they must pull out and must do all sorts of things. What are they citing? Is it for this because the fund is not performing, or also there are other things that are being thrown there so that people can find a way of withdrawing their money? I will appreciate that if those answers can be also dealt with. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Damons, thank you for your report. Could you tell us what is the current financial status of the fund? How liquid is it? What are its liabilities? What are its assets? etc. What return on investment is the fund currently getting? And you indicated that there was a negative return from 2016 to 2018. What was the impact of that negative return? Mr. Damon, what is the status of the members' database? I understand that it was going through a cleanup under the previous Section 26 board, and I assume that that has continued under your curatorship. So what is the current status of that? How many members do you have in the fund, and how far are you with the verification of their contributions, their membership, etc.? How often will members be getting statements going forward? And thank you very much for your commitment that all members will receive a statement at the end of April. How often will they be getting one going forward? You indicated that there was significant maladministration and some rather dodgy property investments, etc. What action is being taken with regard to the maladministration? What is being done to hold those responsible to account? You indicated that there are 600 members, more or less, who are not paying their dues. Do you have any indication as to how many municipalities are collecting dues from members but not paying it across? I understand that there are several financially distressed municipalities who are not paying their pension fund contributions across. And if you do you have any idea which municipalities they are? Then lastly, and this is a joint question to yourself and to the registrar, you indicated that the process will probably take between another 6 and 12 months, and that you are looking to see that the curatorship is terminated as quickly as possible. Obviously, we want to put in place a board that is competent and able to proceed and pick up where the curator leaves off. Mr. Damons, maybe you could answer this. What do you think still needs to be done to stabilize this fund? Thank you, Chairperson. No, Chair. I was a member of the Cape Joint Pension Fund, and I have advised all the councillors that I speak to not invest in the Municipal Councillors Pension Fund, precisely because of the maladministration that has been there for a number of years. If the fund should stabilise and if it should return to a positive growth, I will then advise the councillors differently.
Thank you, Chair. Previously, I indicated that I was a councillor before, and I left just last year. And for the period I've been here, I've advised so many councillors to desist from putting their pension benefits there at the Municipal Pension Fund. One, on two reasons. One, I suspected that there is something going wrong, because when I looked at my pension benefits, I could realize that no, something was not right. But secondly, you know, even the staff that works there, Honorable Mtalan, they will tell you something else today. Tomorrow they tell you something else. If you call next week, they know, no, there's a problem. You see, so there is seriously a problem there, a serious problem. I will not advise anybody who is becoming a councillor to put his pension fund in the municipal councillor's pension fund. There is something wrong. Well, I accept that something is being done now. But I wanted to find out, Chair, whether is there any improvement. And since they are doing the investigation now, if they find out that some councillors who exited before the findings were sort of paid less and they're supposed to be paid more, are they going to compensate them? Like, there was an indication that there's an asset worth 137 million that was bought by councillors' money and it's not registered on the MCPF. Should they decide to bring money, not the asset itself, not the that particular building they're talking about, are they going to pay back that money to councillors who have exited, but maybe who might have been part of. And, you know, Mr. Damon said that there was a period where they had to stop the, I think, the payments of benefits. It's not 2 weeks. It's not 2 weeks. It's more than that. I suffered that myself. I had to threaten you, not you personally, but the company. I had to threaten them to go to court should they not pay within, I think, about 7 days from that period. It's actually more than that. And I think many people have suffered a long time, I mean, for about that, if it's not 2 weeks. I think it's about 30 days or even more than that. I'm a witness of that. I can show you letters from my email and your emails if you are not sure. It's not 2 weeks. It's more than that. So I wanted to correct that because I know it. Chair, I'm not sure whether it is possible not to give members statements of their benefits only, but also how they calculate the benefits, the formula. Because some of these counselors, you must not underestimate them. Some of them are teachers, they are, you know, they understand all these formula things, they've done accounting and so on. They can calculate for themselves so that they quickly see if something is not going right, you know, in their benefits. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, colleague. Let us invite the SARGA team and also the curators, and they can assist us on some of the issues.
Thanks, Chair, for the useful questions. Let me just try and address some of the broader questions, and the curator will come in on some of the finer details. Chair, on area contributions, and I'm glad the member has raised it, and the Treasury is here too, and without putting them on the spot, there is a challenge with area contributions, Chair, and the challenge is simple. If the employer deducts money from an employee, and that money is meant to go into a pension fund and doesn't end there, it is actually a criminal offense.
Yeah.
In the Pension Funds Act, it's there are no two ways about it. It is an offense. Yes, probably you could say, well, as Register, what have you done about the issue, Alan? And it is a complex one, because then it links to the enforcement agencies, it links to the whole system in terms of how then do you prosecute employers who actually are not paying over contributions they've deducted from members into the pension fund. So as the regulator, we were contemplating having a meeting also with Treasury just to appeal to them to help us and impress on municipalities the importance of paying over those contributions to the various retirement funds. Of course, it also doesn't help much if there are issues with some of the funds, and hence the concern which is coming up from members who would like to leave the fund. We are trying to resolve those issues, and as Mr. Damon has indicated, there are steps being taken, and maybe it's part of the communication to the members for them not to panic that we are addressing some of those issues. But the area contributions, Chair, it is quite an important one to try and resolve. And Mr. Demons will provide the numbers if he's got them. Chair, the performance is a tricky one. So just to assist the members, so you have what we call defined contribution funds. Defined contributions are simple. There's no formula. What you put in is what you'll get out plus the return on your savings. You then have what we call defined benefit funds, which is the GPF as an example.
those work with a formula. So depending on how the formula is structured, and usually it will be your last 12 months or 3 years average salary multiplied by a factor, and a factor is generally a return and the number of years you have been employment, then that will give you your retirement benefit. Currently within the municipal retirement funds, we're sitting with 10 defined benefit schemes. So those will be using formulas and 31 defined contributions. So most of the funds are DCs. We don't regulate how funds should necessarily invest their savings. What we do is to set limits in terms of how much exposure they can obtain from the various asset classes. So this talks to Regulation 28. So Regulation 28 will say to you, you are only allowed to invest up to 75% in equities. So it sets the maximum, but it obviously doesn't set the minimum. So that is left to the trustees to devise, and this is where the investment policy comes into play. So one of the questions was around, well, it seems as if the fund changed its rules to enable this challenging investment, and that is the case. So they did change their investment policy to enable investments in these properties, which previously would not have been allowed under their rules. But Chair, I suppose what members are asking, it's even a deeper question, that maybe as register, we should start interrogating the performance of some of these funds and see if we can't in a way help them without necessarily dictating to them how exactly they should be undertaking those investments. Chair, the cleanup of data, another good question. And that question is not only relevant for municipal retirement funds. You see it across the industry, and I won't mention names, but you would be aware of some of the court cases which are in the various courts around data, the lack of data, and why that can become a problem. And I can inform you, Chair, I had a meeting with one of the large administrators a few days ago and impressed on them the importance of ensuring that they've got proper databases. Because without a proper database, you can't calculate exactly what the member's retirement is due. You can't even trace members in terms of their benefits, and this has led to this other problem around unclaimed benefits. It's essentially a data problem, and it's something as the register we should try and address. Chair, let me allow Mr. Damons to come in so that I can refresh on some of the questions, because I bet I have missed some.
The question that was raised, I think one of the first questions was the issue of the 600 withdrawing members and those members that are not contributing anymore. In terms of the rules of the fund, if you are a councillor and you remain a councillor, you have to contribute to the fund. We have indicated and we have approached those municipalities and those councillors who are not contributing. Some of them have indicated that they are contributing to certain other funds, which we think, in our view, is unlawful. And that's where that matter is currently. The issue around the consolidation of the fund, the transfer of a fund, the streamlining of costs and maybe carrying on with self-administration, these are issues that we will be discussing, as I said, going forward. The performance of the fund, and as I mentioned before, the performance of the fund over the last, or since 2015, has shown a downward trend. It relates mainly to the purchase of these vacant stands. That has, to a large extent, contributed to the downward performance of the fund. Currently, we have 1.6 billion rand in assets, various asset classes, and we have the total number of outstanding member credits and beneficiary trusts at about 1,610,000,000. What we haven't factored in, because if you look at the two numbers, it should give you, as at 31st December 2017, a 13 million surplus. What we haven't factored in would be the cost if we had to go to the extreme and liquidate this fund, what the total costs of liquidation would be. And how do we factor that in? Because currently, if you look at our assets and our liabilities, it shows that there's a 13 million rand surplus. What we're saying is we must not confuse that until we understand what the total value of the liquidation of the fund would be. The issue around benefit statements, I think the last benefit statement that was sent out was for the period ending 30 June 2015. We have now signed off the financials for 30 June 2016. Those benefit statements for that period, together with the period 30 June 2017, together with up until the end of 31st December 2017, those benefit statements will all go out by the end of the week. So then we have proper statements to interrogate with each individual counselor that we'll be talking to. The issue of what steps have been taken with regard to the property where there are allegations that certain legal firms are involved and there are allegations that the previous PO was involved. We are still investigating that, but there is a complaint that has been lodged with the Law Society that we're following up against one of the attorney firms that's mentioned in various reports. So we're following up with the Law Society. There is also an affidavit that was sent to the Hawks by one of the previous Section 26 trustees, and we've been following up with the Hawks as well. So we will follow up with those investigations, and our initial findings, and that has been reported to court, and it was part of the reports that were sent to the previous FSB as well, is that we have verified a lot of the allegations that have been made in the past, and we are proceeding through the proper channels with those, whether it be civil litigation against certain entity where we want to recoup funds, or it be criminal investigation against those parties that have been involved in this whole process. The issues around staff, it was a big issue when we got to the office. It was a serious issue as well, staff communication with councillors, internal problems that we had to sort out between the staff and the unions, which we've managed to sort out at this point in time. The staff are cooperating with us, and we've seen there's been an increase in the communication levels with councillors. Just want to see I think I dealt with the issue of benefit statements. And then the issue of the moratorium. When we arrived on the 19th of December last year at the offices, we were required to authorize certain payments. We refused to authorize them because there were certain verification processes that were important to us that were not in place. That moratorium was lifted after a period of 2 weeks. That's the moratorium that we had placed as curators. Was lifted after a period of 2 weeks after we implemented the processes that we were comfortable with when benefits and beneficiaries are paid. I don't know whether I didn't if I left out something?
Chair, there were a couple of questions that weren't answered. The first was, how often will statements be going out going forward? The second one was about the municipalities that are not paying across their dues. How many municipalities are not paying across their dues? And what is being done in that regard? Now, I understood the registrar's comment that there's difficulty in enforcing that and the like, but I just wanted to understand what your sense of the size of the problem is, the magnitude of the problem in that regard. And then the last one was, how long do you think it's going to take to properly stabilize the fund?
While the curator is still scribbling, there was the question around underpayments. It's a difficult one, but I think the curator will go into those issues because the law does enable what we call surplus apportionment. So if there's money which comes through after members have since left, and again, depending on whether they're in a DB or a DC fund, then the register can consider apportioning additional savings towards those members who would have left the fund. But it's a process and an application, and I think that the curator will assist if indeed there are such cases. But the law does enable to compensate members who have already left the fund.
The first question you had, the issue around how often will we send out benefit statements. Our next audit is 30 June 2018, and as per normal, benefit statements will be sent out before December 2018. And then we'll be up to date with benefit statements that are being sent out. The issue of the number of non-contributing municipalities, that figure I do not have currently for you.
So just on that, Chair, let me try and follow up with the team because I think we might be able to get the numbers and then I can provide a written response to the House.
Sure.
So, Chair, then how long do you stabilize? How long do we think it will take to stabilize the funds? Once we have the financial statements up to date, and we have begun with our 2018 at least with working papers, and hopefully we'll have our audit done just after 30 June 2018. I think by this year we'll be in a position to stabilize the fund.
So, just to add on that, and depending on how things turn up as the curator does his analysis, at this stage, I think the plan is not to liquidate the fund. So the plan is to see if we can't fix the problems in the fund, and we think they can be resolved if we attend to the self-administration issue and try and recover some of the lost assets. We think we might just be able to get the fund in a proper standing. But of course, that will depend on what the curator that discovers as he goes along. But the idea is not to liquidate the fund at this early process or stage.
No, thanks, Chair. The question around the compensation issue was covered by the registrar. Thank you very much for that. And Chair, I want to apologize for the period, because I thought they were appointed long before December. So I want to apologize for that. I withdraw that statement, because now I've captured it correctly. Thank you.
Apologies accepted, Chair.
Thank you.
Chair, I thought I could use the benefit of having Treasury and COPTA as part of us today. We certainly have picked up a challenge from a municipal point of view. Today we are talking pension fund deductions that are being made and not being paid over. There are similar challenges, Chair, as it relates to pay as you earn. It's being deducted, it's not being paid over. No. Medical aids being deducted, is not being paid over. So perhaps ourselves, COCTA colleagues, the Treasury, we've already started some work, but best pull our heads together so that we don't wait for a crisis and then be back here, that we start dealing with those issues now. And it's largely informed, Chair, by cash flow and cash constraints. So municipalities are using every possible means to cover their current debt, but creating more debt down the line. And that's something we should be looking at, Chair. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. I think we've taken note of the inputs. As soon as we start the next round of engagements, I think we could also make that a point to focus on as well. I think it's widespread and well known that when financial distress is faced, the first and the order of priority then moves down the order, and you know, so we would need to maybe get to those municipalities sooner, if our resources allow. But we need to maybe engage as well at different levels. So, councillor oversight again. I recommend that we engage councillors in the next round of training to exercise that option. That's important. The second is to how we get CFOs and others to actually apply the rules. The MFMA is also clear that there's some statutory obligations that they need to be complied with, including the VAT, the pensions, and so forth. It's all there. Now, it's just, I think, malicious non-compliance, if I may use the term, that's creating this kind of issue, and it's not good for the system. But thank you. I think we will take note. We will engage with our colleagues as well. We'll be part of that engagement to see how we can start to help this out process. Thank you.
I want to make a short proposal, Chairperson, that we should not wait until this problem becomes bigger. We should communicate immediately to municipalities that we're picking up a problem. They must not engage in this type of activity and so on. In the meantime, SALGA can raise it. The other stakeholders can do the same. But we should not wait. We should not wait.
Okay.
What we can commit from our side is to send out an immediate circular to all municipalities, giving them the legal basis and the importance of dealing with the issue. And we also agree, like TV said, that we will work with stakeholders, SALGA and DECOC as well, because these municipalities are also very likely to fall in the joint collaboration process of severely financially and service delivery constrained municipalities.
Melham?
Chair, I just want to pick up on something that SALGA said earlier, and that is the access to Section 71 reports and data. And Mr. Pillay, this falls squarely in your department and National Treasury, but also to the DG of COGTA. One of the concerns that civil society and that we as public representatives who have to conduct oversight or over your departments and your entities is the lack of access to data. Now, I know there was an initiative a couple of years ago for an open data system, and I'd really welcome some kind of feedback as to where the progress is. And I'm not asking for it now, but I do think that it's something that we should be pushing, that both SALGA and civil society and public representatives can pull data from National Treasury or COGTA and say, this is the status of XYZ municipality, here is their latest financial statement, here is their current assets, liabilities, etc., here's their performance records. And I know that SELGA were involved in a thing called the Municipal Barometer, but it still seems to be lacking some of the back-end data to provide a meaningful response to what people are wanting to know. And maybe that's something that could be fast-tracked and picked up on.
Chair, thank you. I think there's a lot of work in progress that's happening. There's a committee set up on the infrastructure, or the work of information. It also includes Stats SA, it includes other forums. But I would urge members to visit as often as possible the Treasury website. The MFMA website has published whatever information we have on a regular basis. It's there. There's a link also to municipal websites in terms of Section 75 of the MFMA, contracts, borrowing, AFS, annual reports, IDPs, all the related information is meant to be posted, and the links are there, including the audit outcomes. So there's portals available which we could use. And then the other one that was introduced was Municipal Money, that is the Treasury site that has budget and other related information that links into, so it's a user-friendly analysis that has been done and so forth. It's just that perhaps, you know, if we had an opportunity, or maybe we'll circulate to the committee just the various web pages and websites that you could probably also just have as researchers and stuff that we want to look at. Maybe that will help. Wendy, you want to add?
Come on. Okay. Thank you.